Welcome, Dumbheads, to this week's Megasode of MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. Monday through Saturday, I drop one episode per day, identifying the dumbest thing on every single goddamn page of Heroes Unlimited, the gloriously ramshackle superhero RPG from Palladium Books. On Sundays, I combine all the week's previous episodes in one Megasode, like this one. If you'd like to play along at home, we're reading Heroes Unlimited Revised Second Edition, second printing, from December 1998. Today we're discussing page 324 of Heroes Unlimited. Today is a little bit of a grab bag. There's a lot of different stuff on this page that I want to talk about, and it's not really thematically connected in any inherent way, which would have made this a really difficult podcast episode, except that I found the unifying, overarching connection among all the things on this page, which, by the way, is a segment of the spell list in the Magic Explained section of the book. It's a list of spells. I found the one thing about all this rules text that unites it, which is that it has all earned my wrath for taking up space that could have been used to give us golems. Yes, golems. Creatures of legend. Not just in reality, but in Heroes Unlimited as well. We keep reading about fucking golems. Remember back in Psyshield when it talked about how your shield of psionic energy is so badass because it allows you to parry golems? And we were like, what the fuck is a golem? Where are the golems that we're supposed to be parrying with this thing? Remember way back in the enchanted weapon section when it said, oh, one of the cool things about your enchanted weapon is it can even hurt golems. And we were like, what the fuck is a golem? Why am I hurting golems? Are golems bad? Should I be killing all these golems? Should I be worried about a golem attack? And if I lose my magical sword, then I'm fucked. Remember several pages from now in the negate magic spell where it says negate magic doesn't work on golems. Oh no. Oh no. If I've got negate magic, then what am I supposed to do about all these fucking golems? And P.S. what are golems and where are they? All of these questions could have been answered. But, as I discussed back under Psyshield, not only aren't golems in this game, golems aren't almost in this game. Golems were previously in this game. Golems were in the revised Heroes Unlimited. And they were deliberately cut. They were cut for space. They were cut because we had so much other supremely important shit to cram into the magic section. For example, the bullshit on display here on page 324. Let's just start with Blind Watch. As you know, if you've been listening to the podcast lately, we've been tracking every instance of a spell that is about concealing something from sight. There are 9 of these spells. They form 8% of the total spell list, taking up space that could have been used for other things like golems. And here we have one of the primary conceal from sight spells, blind. Blind is a spell that you cast on someone and it makes them blind. Quote, the victim will be temporarily blind, -5 to strike, -10 to parry and dodge, and likely to stumble and fall for every 10 feet of movement, 50% chance. It goes on to say, quote, if the blind spell is cast upon another spellcaster, he cannot use any spells which require his vision while blinded. If the blind spellcaster uses any defensive slash assault spells, such as magic net, call lightning, fireball, carpet of adhesion, etc., there is a 1 to 65% chance that the spell will be misdirected and strike his own comrades. So, if you're blind and you start shooting around fireballs or calling lightning down on locations you can't see or identify, then you get exactly what you fucking deserve, or rather your teammates do, because that's what it's like to hang out with a wizard. No one gets hit with more of a wizard's fireballs than his best friend. We all know this from D&D. If you consult your Blind Watch workbook and note down the penalties given here for not being able to see while you're blind, you'll find that miraculously, they very nearly match the penalties given under Blinding Flash. However, the part about your spells going off in all directions is new. It is only found here. Therefore, tragically, these rules for blindness do not quite match any of the other separate rules for blindness. I should also point out that the only thing that separates these rules, the only thing that makes them not quite match any of the other blindness rules, the thing about your spells going astray because you're blind, greatly complicates adjudicating all those other spells. Not only does it make this spell not fit, but it makes those spells worse, because it's one thing to say it's a flat, you know, you got to roll a dodge of 18 to dodge energy bolt. You got to roll a dodge of 18 to dodge a fireball, because they're magically guided. But if they can then go astray because the caster is blind, and not go astray with a flat penalty, mind you, like not your -5 to strike because there's no strike roll, but instead there is a separate percentile 65% chance, not just that the fireball or lightning will miss, but that it will specifically hit one of the wizard's allies, throws the whole fucking system out of whack. Now we're introducing a percentile chance of your allies being damaged by a misaimed spell. We're introducing the idea that if you're blind, even a magically guided spell doesn't hit. It's just a fucking mess. And of course it is, because, I mean, there are 9 spells that conceal things from sight. Given 9 chances to fuck up the whole game, Of course Palladium fucked it up. Give Palladium 9 iterations of anything. Say to the author of this book, describe to me 9 times how you steer around a pothole in a car chase. One of those rules for steering around potholes will fuck the entirety of Heroes Unlimited. It's just math. Anyway, can you sense that wrath I was talking about? That's enough of Blind Watch. What else is on this page? The spell Resist Fire. Quote, with this spell, the mage can make himself, or one or two others, fire resistant. This means heat has no ill effect, and normal and magic fire does half damage. The spell can be cast up to 60 feet. This is a spell you can cast on yourself or other people, and it lasts for 20 melees, so that's like 5 minutes per level of caster. Costs 3 PPE. So okay, you think, fair enough, fire is a thing, it burns people. That sucks. If I were a wizard, I would sure like to be able to resist fire. Yeah, of course you would. Wouldn't you also like to be impervious to fire? Because that's on the previous page. It costs 6 PPE and has a slightly longer duration, 1 minute more per level of caster, and the same range, and you can also cast it on yourself or other people, and instead of making you half immune, it makes you totally immune to fire. There are 12 third level spells in this game. A mere 12. And one of them is, you're immune to fire, and one of them is, you're halfway immune to fire, and it costs half as much. How bad an editor do you have to be not to realize that's the same fucking spell? That's the same fucking spell at different levels of power. You could keep resist fire, and you could say, at the end, in a short paragraph, barely a paragraph at all, for an additional 3 PPE, the target is completely immune to fire. Done. You saved yourself one whole spell. Why am I so agitated about space being wasted in this section? Because of golems, that's why. But wait, there's more. Another spell on this page, Charismatic Aura. Let me start by saying I actually like what this spell does. I like the effect of this spell. It's a 4th level spell, and it is described elegantly thus. Quote, a particularly handsome tool of deception, this magic can be cast upon the spellcaster or another person. The spell instantly enhances that person's physical beauty by 8, increasing his charisma and charming all who behold him. Although the focal point of the spell is the person on whom it was cast, it affects everybody in a 60-foot radius emanating from the person with the charismatic aura. Thus, everybody in that radius is allowed a saving throw versus magic. Those who successfully save will not be affected. Those who fail to save are affected and will respond accordingly. And then you get 3 kinds of charisma you get to choose between. There's friendship / trust, where you make someone your friend, or you make them trust you or want to be at peace with you. Then there's power / fear, where you intimidate people with a show of power or anger, and that gives you basically a horror factor. It intimidates them. And then there's successful deception. This allows you to lie effectively so that people will trust you. In fact, one of the trigger phrases you can say to trigger the spell is, quote, trust me completely. So how that's different from invoking trust, I don't really know. Sure seems like the same thing to me. Trust and trust, the same thing? Question mark? I leave it to the listener to decide. But anyway, here they're presented as 2 different options. Here's my objection to this spell, which I do like. This spell takes up 30 goddamn lines of this page. Its main effect is to allow you to inspire friendship or a feeling of trust in people, or to intimidate them. Its secondary effect is to increase your physical beauty by 8 to make you more attractive. It offers a saving throw. The rules have to explain who gets that saving throw. Then if they don't make the saving throw, then they're vulnerable to the magic. And if they're vulnerable to the magic, then they're vulnerable to your increased stat and these additional effects, which have some percentage chance of working. Like there's a horror factor to avoid being intimidated, or there's a 1 to 80% chance that they'll trust you despite the lie you try to tell them, etc., etc. Takes 30 lines. My thing is, there is a core stat that does this. I mean, there is specifically a core stat in this game that gives you a percentile chance to, quote, trust / intimidate. It is a core aspect of the game. It's basic attribute, something everyone has. And this spell does, in fact, give a big, giant 8-point bonus to a different fucking attribute, and then have to write special rules, separate special rules, for trust and for intimidation. If the rules text for Charismatic Aura were, this spell increases your mental affinity and physical beauty by 8, we're done. That's all we need. There are existing rules for this. They're core rules to the game, something every character has. But instead, fuck those rules. Let's not even give a bonus to mental affinity. Instead, let's give a bonus to this other stat over here, physical beauty, and then let's write brand new rules, 30 lines worth, for how to get people to trust you or how to intimidate people. And then let's stack a save on top of it. So in practice, this charismatic aura is garbage, because not only do they get a save against magic, but then if they don't save, they get a second save against horror factor at a miserable horror factor of 13, which never goes up, no matter the level of the caster. So this is a terrible way to make people fear you. We already had multiple ways to make people fear you. This is the worst. And it's taken up 30 goddamn lines. And you know what we could have done in 30 goddamn lines? I'll give you one guess. That's right, it's golems. This is why brevity matters. This is why avoiding redundancy matters. It's because among the many things that need to be cut from the amazing magic section of Heroes Unlimited Revised for this bloated second edition, golems, which are still mentioned many times in the rules, but are not present in this book. Golem rules exist, and you know what? They're very good. Quote, from Heroes Unlimited Revised, page 107, the sorcerer first draws a circle of elemental force. Second, he sculpts a golem, humanoid shape, from clay, with two onyx gems worth no less than 1,100 each. 1,100 what? I don't know. No unit is given, but coincidentally in Palladium games, typically one credit equals one gold piece equals one American dollar. Funny how that works out. With two onyx gems for eyes and a heart of iron. The golem can be of any size up to 18 feet tall. The clay is then turned to stone or iron. Then the mage places a single drop of his blood on the golem's forehead. Six SDC points are permanently drained from the sorcerer into the golem, bringing it to life. And then we get a description of two different kinds of golem, the stone golem and the significantly better statted iron golem, both of which are cool, badass, magical fighting machines who regain their artificial SDC thusly, quote, each hour exposed to moonlight restores 20 SDC. You know how many lines all that takes? Two kinds of golems plus a badass description of the power circle you create to make a golem from scratch, including fashioning a humanoid shape from clay and using two onyx gems to form the eyes of your simulacrum. That all takes like 27 lines. Less than the single spell, Charismatic Aura, that does nothing that couldn't be done by increasing your MA by 8. On top of this page being bloated with yet another Conceal from Sight spell. On top of a separate Resist Fire spell when we've already got Impervious from Fire. The egregious waste of space in this section denied us golems, and I'm just sick about it. Especially because they kept the fucking rules that interact with golems. That's, I don't know how many times I can say this, but I'm just going to keep pounding it until I stop being so angry about it. To keep the spells that deal with golems, but drop golems, and then keep horse shit like this, oh, it's just infuriating. I cannot officially say the dumbest thing on this page is that this book doesn't include golems, because that's not specifically on this page. The dumbest thing on this page, officially, is that there's a whole spell that does nothing but make people trust you or help you intimidate those people, and that spell does not even remotely interact with or mention the existing trust slash intimidate rules, which, if used, would have allowed the author to express this 30-line spell in about 5. But that's for the official record books. You and I both know the dumbest thing is that this page has no fewer than 3 bullshit spells that could easily have been rolled into other spells in a much smaller space, and that space could have been used to give my second edition Heroes Unlimited wizard the ability to express his true asshole nature by creating a clay simulacrum of a human being, bringing it to unholy life, placing 2 onyx gems to serve as its eyes, placing a drop of his blood on its forehead, and bringing it to life to wreak havoc upon its foes, taking minor damage along the way, whereupon he would walk it into the moonlight, where it would form a poignant tableau of the contrast between the serenity of his mystical wisdom and his continuous resort to brute violence. Okay, my anger has subsided. No more golem talk in the near future. Except, by the way, you know how the Psy Shield rules say that the shield allows you to parry golems? Heroes Unlimited Revised does confirm that there is no rule against parrying golems. So, one more retroactive fuck you to Psy Shield. Okay, now I'm done. Today we're discussing page 325 of Heroes Unlimited. We're still in the spell section. We're running down all the different spells that were put into this game for magic study characters and other magical characters. I mean, mystically bestowed characters and enchanted object characters sometimes get spells. There's a whole beautiful rainbow of magic-using characters. The thing there is not a beautiful rainbow of is spells. Spells are not like Skittles. There are not a bunch of different colors, a whole spectrum. Spells are like Lucky Charms, in that there are a few good ones that you remember. A red balloon, a yellow star. Mostly what you get, red balloons aside, is a bunch of boring bullshit. You can cherry pick out a few good ones, but for the most part, it's bland, bland, bland. And the same thing is true of the spells in this game. They are just like Lucky Charms. I feel as though my metaphor is sinking, but I'm resolutely staying on board. They're boring. The spells are boring. And there's a bunch of them that are all just kind of the same, or they're like spells you would never take. And I kind of want to talk about that today. There's one of those on this page, and we're going to talk about it briefly. But what we're really going to focus on is what's the harm? I feel like that's the argument I have to make to you, because if you're a longtime role player, you're going to be used to RPG rulebooks that are full of padding, especially if, like me, you're in the generation of gamers who started gaming with things like, you know, Dungeons and Dragons, and Vampire the Masquerade, and GURPS, and now plays or at least reads a lot of indie games that are like 3 pages long and have names like So You Want to Kiss Frankenstein's Monster, and that's all they're about, and it's just cut down to the bone. It's just a tiny, tiny whisper of a game. And so, in retrospect, when you look back at your old favorites, you can see that they're just full of pages and pages and pages of material that nobody needs or wants. Like, Drowning Rules, for example, used to be ubiquitous in role-playing games. And now, it's like, we're all familiar with drowning. Like, there's no need for me to have a giant creaking bookshelf full of different beardy old guys' mechanical versions of what it is to not be able to breathe in the water. It's just drowning. Like, we can figure it out. So that's like a generational difference in games. But the question is, like, what's the harm? Why? What are we missing out on by having all this padding, having these glorious tomes full of filler on our gaming shelves? And I'll tell you what we're missing out on, at least in the case of Heroes Unlimited. We're missing out, as we've been talking about these past few days, on some really good material from the previous edition of Heroes Unlimited. And specifically, today we're going to talk about some really good art from that edition that could have been in this game, but isn't. And instead, the space is taken up by things like the spell Repel Animals. That's the dumbest thing on today's page. I mean, to be perfectly honest with you, that's just because it happens to be the spell on this page that is the most obvious example of a spell you would never take. But this section is full of them. The spell selection for Magic in Heroes Unlimited 2nd Edition was really bad. A lot of spells made the cut that I imagine people rarely choose, or if they do choose them, it's out of ignorance. It's out of not understanding the system. Repel Animals. Here's how it works. Quote, range 30 feet, duration immediate, saving throw. Standard 12 or higher, even for animals. It costs 7 PPE, and here's what it does. Quote, the character can invoke an enchantment that will make even a hostile, predatory animal stop, turn, and leave the area without harming the mage or anybody near him. The animal will not return for hours. The enchantment can affect 6 animals simultaneously. I remind you that this is a level 4 spell, the same level of spell as the amazing spell Carpet of Adhesion. This podcast is not about things that are great about Palladium Magic, so we're not really going to talk about Carpet of Adhesion, but suffice it to say, this is a badass spell. This is like magical flypaper that sticks people down. It is extremely effective and flavorful if you skin it as an actual magic carpet that you create that tangles up on people. That's a 4th level spell. Blind, which we talked about, a very effective spell, despite all the chicanery about how blindness is supposed to work in Palladium. That's a really good spell. Firebolt, a straight-ahead offensive spell. Magic Net, a more indirect offensive spell. All those are level 4 options. Why would you ever pick Repel Animals when, first of all, the save against it is 12, it says, even for animals. Animals normally get a -4 to save against spells, so any other spell you would choose, an animal would normally have to roll a 16 to save against it. But this one spell that's designed specifically to fight animals, they have a better chance to save against. And you've got lots of options for spells you could bust out to take down some animals and keep them from bothering you. Like, for example, way back in level 2 spells, a few days back now, we talked about 2 different spells, Fear and Heavy Breathing, that can be used to affect everyone in a whole area, not just 6 animals. It would be harder to save against, have a longer range, cost fewer PPE, and because it affects a whole area, it would be useful against, like, swarms, large packs of, like, attack animals or hunting dogs or whatever. And those spells are only level 2, so they're easier to get. So, assuming you're a wizard, and assuming you don't want animals to fuck with you, and assuming you spend a lot of your time roaming around in the woods for whatever reason, and assuming that you feel like you need a spell specifically for this eventuality, even so, you really want Fear or Heavy Breathing, not Repel Animals. You don't want to take up one of your level 4 spell slots. And by the way, you don't need a spell specifically for this. How hard is it when you're a wizard to convince a bear or a few wolves that you're not to be fucked with? Again, Firebolt is a 4th level spell. I feel like that would do it. You don't really hear of a lot of guys out in the woods, you know, practicing with their flamethrowers, getting jumped by angry bears. Or, you know, you could take Magic Net. If you really feel like a bear attack is a serious threat to you, or like a wolf pack is coming for you at any moment, if you've maybe like stolen a wolf cub, because that's honestly a very player character thing to do. I don't even judge you for that. You know, you saw it, you ran into it as a random encounter, you gave it a cute name, and then the GM was like, you know, it has like parents and stuff. And you're like, well, fuck that. I'm its dad now. And now you're just starting to bond with Cuddles the Wolf, and here comes the wolf pack. In that scenario, you know what? Don't take Repel Animals. Take Magic Net. You can use it to net up to 6 human-sized creatures, and you can only cut out of this thing with a magic weapon, which wolves are not known to carry. And then just leave. Just you and Cuddles, hand in paw, off into the sunset. You'll be fine. And Magic Net works on, like, people and criminals. Remember those? The things you're supposed to be fighting? What are you doing in the woods? Anyway, So yeah, repel animals, it's the dumbest thing on this page, but it's not even that bad a spell. It's, I guess the dumbest thing is the decision to put it here, and the design philosophy. Likewise, I mean, look across the page. You know, in the opposite column from repel animals is a generic-ass picture of this wizard. But like a lot of spells in this section, it's just kind of here, and that wouldn't really be a problem. It wouldn't really be dumb per se if there weren't like a cutting room floor littered with great stuff from Heroes Unlimited Revised, just waiting to fit into this magic section that didn't make the cut because somebody needed a spell specifically to scare away wolves instead of a generic scare shit away spell. Similarly, the art. And that's really what I want to talk about today, because as I have vowed, I am going to give you every day in this section that I suggest that something doesn't belong here. I'm going to back it up by giving you something from Heroes Unlimited Revised that would have been better. I really want to talk about art. And if you look over in the other column, right across from Repel Animals, in fact, what you'll find is a tiny little illustration of a broke-ass looking wizard. There's no other way to say it. Not to impugn a guy who's obviously down on his luck. He's got a tattered cloak, distressed wizard pants. He's got some kind of beat-up knee armor on. He's still throwing eldritch bolts, but he's taking a knee. This broke-ass wizard, I mean, I suppose he could be from the modern era. Maybe that's a magic sword that he carries because it has some special properties. Maybe he's got an eccentric fashion sense, and maybe he's just a particularly impecunious wizard, or maybe he's had a real rough day and his wizard garb was spotless at the beginning of the day. Sure doesn't look like that. It sure looks like this is a decidedly post-apocalyptic wizard from, oh, let's say a post-apocalyptic Earth where some sort of portals or rifts, if you will, have opened and released horrors upon the world and resulted in everybody being dressed in either tattered clothing or skull-themed mecha. He looks more like a wizard in that scenario. We're like 11 pages into the magic section at this point, and other than one even tinier illustration of a totally generic wizard in maybe some kind of cloak, I don't know, he's got his back turned to us on the very first page, those are the only two pictures we've seen in this section at all. It's very light on illustrations. But nonetheless, in this jam-packed section, we made room for repel animals, numerous other redundant spells, and one broke-ass wizard. What we didn't make room for is a passel of quite good art from Heroes Unlimited Revised from the magic section. I can't do it justice on the podcast verbally. I need you to go to the Instagram and just compare, okay? Compare the picture on this page of what I think is the like iconic Leyline Walker from Rifts. I think that's what the guy on this page is. Compare that little weak-ass illustration that barely belongs in this section to the pictures I'm going to post on the Instagram from Heroes Unlimited Revised. On the very first page of the magic section, we got a big, impressive opening graphic that says magic, and it's got this very robed wizard with a very pointy beard doing some kind of magic to a little tiny mini chest that he's holding in one hand, and there's like this magic gas moving between his hand and the chest. There is no mistaking this guy for anything but a wizard. His sleeves are tremendous. I'm not going to get out a ruler to measure this, but my feeling is, and I think I'm right on this, I think you could fit this guy's entire waist in his sleeve. It's that big and dramatic. Also, he's so robed that his hood is going all the way over the front of his face, like over his eyes probably. Like not quite all the way over his eyes. I think you can just barely see in front of him, but he's going to be running into a lot of low-hanging branches with this style of robe. And his beard is extremely angular, and it juts out past his nose. He is such a wizarding caricature. He's on the verge of looking like a cartoon from anti-wizard propaganda, but it's not quite over the line. He's just a very stylized, very cool wizard. And he's got this great like pebbly pattern to his robe. It's not just a flat. It's so good. And that's just page one. Page two of the section, another very passable superhero wizard type character. She's actually an enchanted weapon character. You can tell because she's got this big sword that she's got on her thigh. She's okay. She's got a very unusual collar and slightly a weird body type, but perfectly passable. Certainly reads as Super Wizard. Speaking of, I must direct you to page 94 in Heroes Unlimited Revised. Look at this bad motherfucker. This guy really meets the brief on like a mystically bestowed hero. You want to see this on the Instagram, but this guy, he's leaving like some kind of a trail of once again magic gas behind him as he flies through the air. He's in this like pointy shoulder getup. There are these little like patches of like a mystical pattern on there. He's got a full beard, rare for superheroes, a full beard, and he's got some kind of energy coming out of his hand, but it's got a pattern to it. It's forming like a little devil head shape, almost. Very exaggerated cut on like the top of the boot and the shoulders, giving him this sort of vaguely exotic, mystical look, sort of really striking that Captain Marvel balance. You know, Captain Marvel, the classic mystical bestowed character, whose costume really walks that tightrope of like, looks like a genie uniform, but also looks like a onesie. It's got that sash breaking it up. So he's not wearing just one big red skin tight, you know, kind of featureless nude style, like undressed action figure style, low res nudity jumpsuit. Instead, he's got that nice gold sash and the collar on the cape and everything. It's a really cool look. This is very similar to that. A great picture of a magical superhero. He also, on his belt, as a belt buckle, has a giant eyeball. Come on now. I mean, if you could pick one accessory that says, I'm a superhero, but a weird superhero, eyeball belt buckle. You could even leave your fancy boots at home if you got that. This guy could be wearing sneakers, and I would still know he's magical as hell. I've already talked about the circles of power. For every circle of power, you get a little diagram that you can draw of that circle of power, how it needs to be drawn to summon the power, along with the power words. Now, you didn't have to keep circles of power, because I guess if you're the designer of this game, you hate fun. You love PPE and you hate fun, so you replaced one with the other in the transition between editions. But even if you hate fun, and even if you had to have all these spells with their stat blocks, with PPE requirements to like standardize your magic system and make it boring, even if you had to do that, you could have kept some of these diagrams of magic circles just as random cool shit. D&D 3.0 and 3.5 did this all the time. It's just illustration after illustration of like diagrams of equipment and magical sigils and shit that is irrelevant to the game. There's never any description of it in the text. And I love that. It's like illustrations of what you would find in a wizard's spellbook. Even though like the actual D&D rules don't give a damn about what a ritual circle looks like. That's not what the D&D 3.0 rules are about. They're about math and feats, and especially feats that require a lot of math. But the art's very evocative, so you still feel like you're reading a spellbook, even though what you're actually reading is effectively an extended word problem that you're meant to play out. But anyway, the circles of power in Heroes Unlimited Revised, you know, the art's not as cool as this stuff in D&D 3.0 or 3.5, but it's still cool. In an old school way, it does feel like spell casting. It does feel magical. This shit could have been in this section. Certainly better than a broke-ass wizard, but okay. Let's say you don't want those. We got rid of circles. Let's get rid of the pictures of circles too. At least this one slot, this one illustration slot, just on this page. The last two pages of the Heroes Unlimited Revised Magic section have two badass illustrations. On the right-hand side, there's a picture of what looks to be an axe-wielding wizard fighting a ninja while a very tall skeletal gray looks on, you know, like one of the aliens from the X-Files. And the ninja is throwing, once again, magic gas in the wizard's face. Magic gas features very prominently in these illustrations, and it works. I don't know why it looks magical, but it does. It works. There's all this great shading on this. This is a badass illustration. And then over on the other facing page, there's a gigantic fucking monster with eyeballs on the end of its tentacles and two muscular, beefy, three-fingered hands and a central, like, column that just reaches the ground with no legs at the bottom of it, like a giant boss sprite from Chrono Trigger or some shit, and it's got a slavering maw with big crooked teeth in the middle, and then all shaded out in the foreground, there's a horrified looking guy who's got one hand up, like that's gonna do anything against this big slavering monster. It's not. He's about to get eaten. He's about to be mangled by crooked teeth. That would be the name of this picture. If I had drawn it, it would be entitled About to be Mangled by Crooked Teeth by Chris Newton. I love these illustrations. They're all just sitting here waiting to be used. They're quite good illustrations, and vitally, they look like they belong in a magical superhero section. The guy with the eyeball on his belt buckle, absolutely a superhero. No regular wizard has this kind of fashion sense. And flying around and everything, the boots especially. I mean, wizards wear cool boots, but really, nobody has cooler boots than superheroes. And this guy's both. He's the cream of the crop, and it shows. The giant no-leg, tentacle-eye slavering mob beast, not particularly a superhero thing, but it sure as hell looks like a dangerous demon who's horny for magic, which is something we talk about in this section. And the guy in the foreground who's all shaded out and is going, oh no, and is about to be mangled by crooked teeth. By his silhouette, he looks like he's wearing modern clothes. So this looks like a cultist who's gotten in over his head and he's summoned some shit that's going to kill him. And you're going to have to intervene. And this is all happening in like the modern day. And it's probably going to wreck a city block. Very superhero situation, even though there are no superheroes pictured. Much better than what we get in Heroes Unlimited 2nd Edition. Opposite Repel Animals, which is an illustration of a guy who, look, if it's not the post-apocalypse and you're dressed like that, you're a wizard with no self-respect. I mean, God knows I am no arbiter of fashion. God knows that, like my lumberjack forefathers here in the Pacific Northwest, I know how to wear a flannel shirt until it is no longer welcome in polite company, because you don't throw out a flannel shirt. You wear it until it is destroyed by natural process of erosion. But I know how to wear a suit to my wedding. I know how to wear a suit to an important day at work. I at least have the self-respect to dress up if I'm going to go out representing something. And if I'm going to go out superheroing, especially superheroing with the sheer power of my will, my sense of superiority is my power, as it is for a wizard, I'm not going out dressed like this. Unless it's the post-apocalypse, which it clearly is for this guy. This is a Rifts character. He's not a superhero. He's not dressed like a superhero. He's not wearing an eyeball belt buckle, and frankly, I don't think he could carry it off. Again, technically, the dumbest thing in this page, repel animals. A redundant spell. You've got limited space. This is already a niche concept for a spell, and its execution makes it almost never worth taking. So it's kind of a waste of space. The large-scale dumb thing is the sheer amount of space that is wasted in this section when there is material, and especially evocative art, just waiting on the bench, just standing in the dugout, there's so much evocative material that could have made this section feel magical that is not here. And so whenever you see a generic piece of art or a spell that adds nothing, it's really frustrating if you remember how good and how magical the revised Heroes Unlimited magic section felt. Whereas this page just has nothing for you. Even if all you want to do is kidnap wolf cubs all day long, this page really has nothing for you. Today we're discussing page 326 of Heroes Unlimited. We're still in the magic section, the magic explained section that mainly includes a big old spell list for magic using characters. It's been an interesting section to cover so far, because unlike all the other stuff in this game, which I have mostly sort of evaluated in its own right, on its own terms, this section, the magic section, I've really been comparing and contrasting to the magic section from Heroes Unlimited Revised, the previous edition of this game, which was a thinner tome, a bluer tome, a game without many of the bells and whistles of this later edition, but with certain beloved features and pages that are not found here in the second edition, which is so huge and so overstuffed that many things had to be cut despite the much larger size of the second edition. So every day, as is my vow, I swore, editor's note, see episode 319, I was so outraged by the loss of circle magic in this edition that I swore, I vowed, that every time I pointed out something so dull or redundant that I felt it didn't belong here in the magic section, I would offer something from Heroes Unlimited Revised that could have been here instead, something that was cut and shouldn't have been cut. Today, I have good news and bad news for you. Number one, I'm going to break my vow. Okay, we all knew it was coming. It's been, what, 6 pages? Come on. I'm a different person now, and I can't be held accountable. However, I'm only really breaking the letter of my vow, because what I'm going to offer to you instead today is something that shouldn't be here in Heroes Unlimited 2nd Edition, and I'm going to offer something that should be here from, pause for dramatic effect, Rifts. Yes, Rifts, the game that I also vowed I would never talk about. I'm really knocking it out of the park right now with my vows. I'm here today with some Rifts content because there is a glaring omission of something that was in Rifts and is not in Heroes Unlimited 2nd Edition, and it's bad for the game, it's bad for you the consumer, and it's bad for fucking robots who God knows they've got it hard enough as it is here in the robophobic 2nd Edition of Heroes Unlimited. So okay, enough preamble, what am I talking about? On this page, we have the first of the level 5 spells, and there's one called Energy Disruption. I'm not going to read you the first paragraph of this spell because it's fine. I have no bone to pick with the first paragraph of this spell. Suffice it to say, it's a spell where you can basically depower and nullify technology. It simply stops working. And then once the spell effect is done, it's back to working normally as though nothing had ever happened. The paragraph enumerates different gadgets you can do this to. Cars, computers, cameras, sensors, appliances, batteries, alarm systems. No damage to the device. It just straight up doesn't work. It's totally depowered for the duration of the spell, which is 3 minutes per level of experience, which is long enough to like sneak past a camera, or I guess strut past a camera, dance past a camera if you want. It's depowered. It's long enough to get away if you're in a car chase. It's long enough to run up and sock somebody if you're a boxer wizard, while their energy rifle is depowered. A great utility spell, great asymmetrical use of magic as a sort of workaround to other people's abilities, just a little edge for the wizard in the never-ending battle between the science of magic and the science of science. It's what comes after this first paragraph that is a real problem. So let me tell you what comes after it here in the second edition of Heroes Unlimited, a game of superhero action set in an approximation of the modern world. Quote, in a low-tech world like Palladium, the spell will cause candles, torches, lanterns, and campfires to sputter and go out, erupting back to full life the moment the spell comes to an end. Until then, they cannot be relit by any means. It can also be used to diminish the strength/damage of magic fire and energy structures, like Circle of Flame and energy-based wards, by half. However, this disruption is only good against existing energy magic already put into place, and does not diminish the damage caused by energy bolts, fireballs, call lightning, dragon's breath, wind, cold, kinetic force, and similar magic attacks, nor can it affect spells of legend, or magic weapons, potions, circles, scrolls, or enchanted items. There's so many things to deal with here. First of all, dragon's breath still doesn't exist. Thanks, game. Thanks for checking in. Still no dragons. Number two, how dare you bring up circle magic? In this context, of all places, the circle magic that used to be in this game but was cut and we are now denied? Fuck you. I hope you are eaten by a tiger whose head you are trying to fashion into a magical hat. Thirdly, spells of legend. What are those? Don't know on the basis of this game that I'm reading right now. There's still only one known magic potion. There's still no known scrolls. On a final nitpicky note, what does it mean to relight the same fire? Like, this spell puts out a fire, right? It targets a fire. Hey, there's that bonfire over there. All the people are having fun at the beach, and I'm not invited because I'm a weirdo wizard. I want to ruin their night. Let me put out that bonfire. Point my bony wizard finger, fire be gone, bam, no more fire, because I cast energy disruption. Then all the kids run over to it with their beach clothes and their sexy bodies, and they try to relight the fire. They can't, because this spell says, quote, they cannot be relit by any means, meaning fires put out by this spell. How does the universe know it's the same bonfire? Can I take the wood somewhere else and restart it? Or can I throw new wood on and restart it? Or what if I move everything like slightly to the left? What if I start over with new wood just over to the left and restart my sexy nighttime beach party? Shouldn't take long. I mean, I got more wood around, obviously. You got to plan ahead to keep the bonfire going. If everybody's going to be making out, we don't want to be caught up short in an inopportune time. Have to go gather more driftwood. So we got it all in a pile here. Let's throw it over to the left. What, 1 foot, 6 inches? How far do we have to go before the universe, you know, the living tribunal or whoever, will adjudicate? Technically, that is a separate bonfire. It may be lit. But anyway, that's small potatoes. Big picture, pulling out for a minute, much like a dumbass teen narrowly avoiding ruining his life at a sexy nighttime beach party, this whole paragraph exists, if you think about it, to explain why the energy disruption spell is still useful even in a fantasy world, like even in Middle Earth, where there are no security cameras and no cars, and therefore no car chases, energy disruption is still a perfectly useful spell. The question is, why would you need to say this in Heroes Unlimited, which is set in the modern era? In fact, it's a super modern era. It's an extra more than modern era, right? We got a robot power category. Everybody's got a bionic arm because it's the 90s. So technology is everywhere. Why would we need a whole paragraph, longer than the first paragraph, mind you? There's a paragraph explaining what the spell does, and then there's a paragraph like almost twice as long justifying why it's still useful in a fantasy world, which this game isn't set in. I haven't checked on this because I feel I've more than met my quota for delving into other Palladium role-playing games over the course of this section, along with Psyonix. I've had enough. But my guess would be this paragraph was added when this spell was taken from something like Mechanoids or Beyond the Supernatural and plopped into the Palladium Fantasy RPG. Probably what happened is they ported the spell over and they realized this spell is all about disabling machines and electronics, and those aren't a big deal in Palladium Fantasy. So let's add a paragraph where we say, no, this spell is still good. This warmed over content from another game set in a totally different kind of world, it's fine. It works mainly on cars, which don't exist, and security cameras, which don't exist, but also fires are like the fantasy equivalent of machines. It puts out fires, which is, of course, a fantastically worthwhile thing to do with 15 goddamn potential psychic energy points. Like, twice as much human potential as in the entirety of two grown-ass average adults. Let me just spend that to, like, put out this candle, and it shall not be relit again for, like, 15 minutes. Such is my power. But yeah, this whole thing is just, it's calibrated for a fantasy world, probably written for Palladium Fantasy when the spell was ported from some other game. Then when it was ported back from Palladium Fantasy to Heroes Unlimited, they just didn't take it out. Because why would they? Because what else could possibly go at the end of that beautiful first paragraph that describes a wonderful spell that's very useful and very worthwhile? I'll tell you what could have fucking gone there. What goes there at the end of the spell description in Rifts, a game that, like Heroes Unlimited, is set in a technological world where technology and robots and stuff are all very important. In Rifts, there's no second paragraph per se, but the first paragraph ends with the following sentence, quote, cannot affect MDC or power armor, robots, or military vehicles. Now, I could quibble with the comma usage in that sentence. There are a lot of possible ways to interpret it. It's a veritable Second Amendment of really high-stakes grammatical confusion. But certainly the gist of it is this. If you're a wizard and you have energy disruption and 15 PPE to blow, or 12 as the case may be, that's how much it costs in rifts, you can disable a security camera. You can conk out somebody's car in a car chase. What you can't do is get in your little wizard boots in the morning, rock right up to a 12-foot tall demolisher bot, and then just point your bony finger at its big robot skull head and say, energy disruption, and fucking one-shot a whole robot with no save. You can't do it because it's a robot. It's a whole type of character. Likewise, power armor. You can't just one-shot Iron Man because you've got this spell. Of course not. That's not what it's for. It's like a utility spell or like a debuff for somebody who's got a laser gun. You can't just use it to take out a whole character because they happen to be mechanical. Or at least you can't in Rifts. You can absolutely do that shit in Heroes Unlimited because while they did manage to find room for a whole paragraph to explain why this spell is still useful if you live in fucking Middle Earth, which you don't, they couldn't find room for the one sentence from Rifts, which I remind you was published before this game, that makes it so this spell is not a no-save, one-shot solution against all robots, everyone with vital bionic parts like bionic internal organs, everybody in giant power armor, like all mecha, all of these characters. Like, there are no fewer than 5 power categories in Heroes Unlimited that have, at least potentially, bionics or robotics as a significant power source. Having one spell that can essentially one-shot any of them with no save is unacceptable. And it didn't need to be this way because the rule preventing that already existed in Rifts and was cut for Heroes Unlimited 2nd Edition. Or was never noticed because maybe this version of the spell was cut and pasted from the fantasy game instead of the post-apocalyptic game. So yeah, the dumbest thing on this page is that there is a much-needed rule that already existed for this spell that was not included, and in its place is a whole paragraph of useless explanation of why this spell would still be good in a fantasy game, which this isn't. I confess that I have technically broken my vow today. I throw myself on your tender mercies, dumbheads. I promise to do better in the future, and also never to talk about Rifts again, unless I have occasion to, in which case you can expect more broken vows, as my daily podcast schedule requires. That is my worthless promise to you. Today we're discussing page 327 of Heroes Unlimited. We're in the magic section. We're in the section that describes spells. I got a lot of complaints about magic in general, about this game's idea of magicalness as compared to Heroes Unlimited Revised, but we're not here today to talk about that shit. We're here to talk about one spell in particular, Call Lightning. And this isn't about, you know, the spell as such. This is not about my objection to, you know, how magic is portrayed in this game or how they changed the magic rules from last time. We're taking a break from that today. This is about one terrible rule system. The whole system involved with dodging in Heroes Unlimited 2nd Edition. And the way that this one spell is just the cherry on top, just the crowning achievement of bad design on top of a book full of bad dodge rules. I've been stewing about this for a long time. We haven't really gotten to talk about like the core rules of Heroes Unlimited for a while now. Now's our chance. Now's my chance to just put this to bed. First, for context, we got to talk about the spell. So here's the description of Call Lightning. Quote, "This spell creates a lightning bolt, which can be directed at any specific target up to 300 feet away. The lightning bolt shoots down from the sky, hitting the desired target. The target or area must be within the spellcaster's line of vision. The lightning bolt does 1d6 points of damage per level of the spellcaster's experience. This magic can be cast outdoors or in. Damage is inflicted only to the specific person or target." So, this is a spell. You can cast it wherever you want. Indoors, outdoors, doesn't matter. In any case, lightning shoots down from the sky and hits your target. Not a spot you point to, necessarily. Like, you could, if you wanted to, call forth lightning to hit that particular point on the ground over there. But that's not the way it typically works. Typically, you cast the spell, you say the incantation, and magically, lightning shoots from the sky and strikes the person you specified in your spell. In fact, it's so specific that it only affects them. It only damages them. You would think, for example, that if you're in like an old metal shack with a tin roof, that calling a lightning bolt to shoot down directly into the shack and strike your target, you would think that would have like some collateral effects. But no, it's so specific the lightning only hits your target. Okay, so can people save against this? Quote, "Saving throw, none. It always hits unless one's opponent rolls a natural 20 or a modified 24 or higher to dodge." Bullshit. Bullshit you can dodge this. Here's my problem. Superheroes dodge everything. In comic books, superheroes dodge bullets, superheroes dodge lasers, Superheroes dodge robots and all manner of animals. Superheroes dodge out of the way of computer-guided attacks. Superheroes dodge hails of gunfire. Superheroes dodge everything. But not in Heroes Unlimited. Not if you've been reading along the same book that I have. This one spell makes a mockery of all the persnickety dodge rules that we've read in this book so far. When it comes to dodging lightning of all places, not, mind you, like a blast of lightning from somebody's fingers. Like, if it's force lightning, if you gotta wait for the old wrinkled emperor to wag his wrinkly old evil pale hands at you, then sure, you can jump out of the way. That's fine. I'm talking about a bolt of lightning as we know it in the real world that comes straight down from the sky and smites your ass. You can dodge that of all the things to be able to dodge, even on grounds of speed of the attack. You shouldn't be able to dodge lightning. According to the rules in this book, bullets and lasers, normally, unless you got some kind of special power, you can't dodge them because they're too fast. So already, a lightning bolt, speed of light, shouldn't be possible. Yet here we are. You only need a 24 dodge to get out of the way. There are ninjas out there throwing kicks that are harder to dodge than this lightning bolt. But speed is just one thing. There are a number of different kinds of attacks that you explicitly cannot dodge in Heroes Unlimited 2nd Edition. They include, and I hate that I know these, but I do know them, and this is a great chance to throw it back in this game's face, so here they are. Attacks you can't see coming. Can't dodge it if you can't see it coming. So I hope your ass is looking up when somebody calls lightning down on you. Speaking of attacks from above, you explicitly can't dodge attacks from the rear. Now, I take rear to mean out of your field of vision. Kind of the same as not being able to dodge an attack you can't see coming, only even more limiting, because an attack from the rear, even if you can somehow sense it coming, if it's coming from behind, then technically you can't dodge it. My feeling is directly overhead, same. That rule needs to apply to directly overhead attacks as well. But okay, maybe you disagree. Maybe you think that rear means rear, and you can dodge attacks that come from directly overhead that you can't see. You also can't dodge a long-range attack, like being shot by a sniper. You can't dodge that. You can't dodge a bullet from a block away. Although you can, I guess, dodge an attack coming at you at the speed of light from outside your field of vision out of the goddamn sky. All you need to do is roll a 24. You know, it's tough. It's not like being punched in the back of the head or being shot from across the street, which are impossible to defend against. Lightning bolt from the sky? Sure, by all means. And by the way, you shouldn't even be able to dodge bullets and energy blasts most of the time, even from short range or medium range or whatever. But the game says when you dodge those things, you're really only dodging them by making a split second reaction to your attacker's movements, or it says even their facial expression. So when you dodge a gunshot, it's not like you're really dodging a bullet in flight. It's that you're interpreting someone's body language and someone's face. Like they're getting that, I want to shoot that guy look, and you got to jump out of the way at just the right moment, which is already a rationalization of like comic book bullet dodging. But it doesn't work here because, number one, like everybody understands the look in the face of, I'm going to hit that guy with a bullet. The person's carrying a gun. They're looking pretty testy. They're narrowing their eyes at you. They look like they're concentrating on something. The gun is aimed in your general direction. These are all cues that point you toward, that guy wants to shoot me. And, you know, I'm a player character, so probably for good reason. Like, probably this does not come totally unexpected. So when he starts to wave that thing over in my direction, maybe if I got a good instinct, a good intuition, I can jump out of the way just the right moment. What do you have to see in a wizard's face? You know, given that like incantations are all coded, we know from the magic section that they're all full of like bullshit nonsense words to like throw people off the trail. Wizards have lots of spells. They got a whole field of different opponents that they're up against, maybe. So this person is standing there in their robes and their pointy hat, and they look over at you, maybe. Maybe that's the most you get. What do you see in their face exactly? Like, how are they holding their eyebrows that you're like, you know what? That guy's going to hit me with a fucking lightning bolt. I just know it. He's going to hit me with a lightning bolt, number one. And normally, I would just dive to the side because the lightning bolt would come from right above me. But we're indoors. Don't forget, you can use the spell indoors. We're in the basement rec room of my suburban home. So I guess the lightning would have to come down, remember, out of the sky explicitly, because that's how this spell works. The lightning would have to come out of the sky, maybe through the back patio door that I kept open today, and then down the basement stairs, and I guess they would be coming from that angle. So let me jump out of the way of the straight line described between me and the basement stairs. I get that seems like the right dodge to make here. Huh! Off to the side, narrowly avoided. Something moving at the goddamn speed of light. Narrowly avoided. Death by lightning bolt. Good thing you didn't throw a fireball. Good thing you didn't read those eyebrows wrong. Good thing you didn't hit you with an energy bolt or a force field to suffocate you. You really studied the look in his eyes. You really practiced some defensive empathy there and thought, If I had that look in my eyes, I'd go lightning bolt. Let me jump behind this overstuffed chair over by the minibar. Get out of the way of this lightning. God damn. The thing is, I don't even object to dodging lightning in a superhero game. In this context, sure. It's like D&D, where you just get a reflex saving throw against everything. It does, like, we just don't think about it anymore. Whole goddamn room fills with hellfire. It's like, oh, make your saving throw for half damage. And I mean, if you really think about it, it's like, well, where did I go? Like, where did I dodge to? How exactly did I give this unexpected room-clearing explosion the slip? But you just get a saving throw, because it's a big area effect spell, and it's D&D. And if you want to do that in a superhero game, you are more justified in that. Because if this were Lord of the Rings, or Conan, and lightning shot out of the heavens at somebody, and they somehow jumped out of the way of the lightning, we would expect an explanation for that shit. We would need at least some kind of, you know, bullshit line about, like, preternatural senses, or a slight premonition, or fate intervened, or something. In a comic book, if somebody dives out of the way of lightning, unless it's a particularly gritty comic book, we just accept, like, sure, Batman can dodge lightning. He's ready for lightning. He stays ready for lightning at any time. He plans for lightning in every occasion. And so when there's a lightning strike, of course he jumps out of the way, because he's Batman. And if it did hit him, it would do no damage, because his whole costume is insulated against lightning at all times. And if it did hurt him, then he'd survive and recover because of his work ethic and tenacity, which is all you need to overcome a lightning wound in comic books. It's fine. It's comic books. That's not my problem. My problem is not that people can dodge lightning. Well, my objection is, this spell describes an outrageously improbable and difficult to defend against attack. This is a spell, you say these few magic words, and lightning shoots out of the sky at full speed, speed of light, down to the surface, then, not just to the surface of the earth, but into a building if you want, underground if you want. The lightning just twists and turns down through windows, through ventilation shafts, I guess, and homes in unerringly on the person you specified, with no warning. In a game where a superhero moving at Mach 1 can't so much as dodge a dodgeball without taking penalties, in a game where most people have no chance to meaningfully dodge gunfire, I do not accept that in this one instance, the dodge gods smile upon us all, and all it takes is a bit of a lucky break for the hair on the back of your neck to stand up and be like, I'm about to get hit by lightning. Huh, out of the way. And you're fine. No way. The ability to dodge this spell is the dumbest thing on this page. Either you shouldn't be able to dodge a goddamn lightning bolt, especially when it, like, bursts unexpectedly out of your fireplace and hits you in the den, or the dodge rules just require some reconsideration. This shouldn't be the one instance where a superhero can do superhero-style dodging. Now, that doesn't mean there shouldn't be a call lightning spell. Allow me to point out, per my vow, that in Heroes Unlimited Revised, the rules don't state anything about dodging lightning. Can you? Can't you? I guess it depends on the situation. It's also not specified whether you can hit people who are indoors with lightning that comes out of the sky, left to the GM's adjudication. So this is not only yet another terrible entry in this game's track record of dodge rules, but it's also worse than the previous edition of the spell found in the previous edition of the game, which was shorter and just didn't specify these things. So you could decide ad hoc, like, if an evil wizard, if he wants me to know I'm going to get killed by lightning, and he's like, puny mortal, I shall smite you with lightning from the heavens, and then he points his finger at me, then maybe I can jump out of the way and I can dodge. If it's a surprise, if he's the one hiding behind the couch and he, you know, whispers his magic spell and then a bolt of lightning, like, somehow makes its way through the plumbing and leaps out of the toilet to strike me dead, then of course I can't fucking dodge. Nobody expects toilet lightning. He's got me dead to rights. He's a smart wizard. He deserves my charred corpse as compensation for his trouble in learning call lightning and, by the way, sneaking into my den and hiding behind the couch. Good job. You got me. I'm dead and you deserve it. But no. Instead, we had to specify. Instead, we've got rules, not rulings, and they're just the worst. Really, I think you shouldn't be able to strike people indoors with this spell. Like, you're a wizard, you got other spells. Do a fireball indoors. Have some decency. Today we're discussing page 328 of Heroes Unlimited. We're in the Magic Explained section, and we're discussing spells. Yesterday we talked about Call Lightning, the nefarious spell that allows you to summon lightning to smite your foe, even indoors, even underground. But, bad news, this lightning apparently moves at the speed of a high-arcing shuttlecock and can be readily dodged. Yesterday was an exciting day to talk about a spell, because it was a real dumb spell. Today, it's a boring spell day, but I think we can salvage it by talking about the exciting material that should be in its place, that was cut from this game, despite appearing in Heroes Unlimited Revised, the previous edition of which this game is, ostensibly, an improvement. The spell that is here, the spell that we need to talk about at least briefly, is Mystic Shield. There's nothing inherently wrong with Mystic Shield. It's a simple spell that creates a field of energy around yourself or something else. You can make a wall or a bubble. It's got some SDC. It blocks damage. That's all. Very simple. My objection to Mystic Shield is that it is almost identical to another spell called Energy Field. Down to the fact like the wording from one spell is reprinted in the other spell. They're almost exactly the same spell. There are only two differences. Number one, Mystic Shield is a slightly higher level spell. Number two, Mystic Shield scales, but Energy Field doesn't. So even by like second level, Mystic Shield is way better than Energy Field, because you get more SDC for every caster level you have, as opposed to Energy Field, which is a flat amount. So my complaint here is simple, it's direct, you had a really limited space. There are a lot of spells in the Palladium Megaverse, right, between Rifts and Palladium Fantasy and Beyond the Supernatural, even Mystic China. You got a lot of spells to choose from, and a very small section of Heroes Unlimited to devote to like the cream of the crop, just giving the best small assortment of spells for a crime-fighting wizard in a superhero game. Giving us 14 lines of rules text that is identical to another 14 lines of rules text, except this version of the spell scales and the other one doesn't, is flat out unacceptable. It's simply a waste of space. Just keep the version of the spell that scales. I mean, Mystic Shield is level 6, Energy Field is level 4. They're very close in level. Definitely these would be spells taken by characters who are sort of in the same weight class, right? Wizards of the same level of accomplishment. So why have two versions of the same spell, but one is worse and you'd never take it? That's it. That's my only complaint. And you can't make a podcast episode about that, right? Because it's a little niggling objection. It's like I'm slapping the author on the wrist for wasting 14 lines of space in their book. It's not like they desperately needed those 14 lines. It's not like they had some amazing content that they had to cut out of the second edition because they didn't have room for it in this magic section. Like the goddamn monstrous mystic villains table. Yes, the monstrous mystic villains table. Remember a few days ago when we talked about art, we talked about the big eye tentacle monster with crooked teeth and a central stock, that awesome piece of art. It's up on the Instagram. That piece of art comes from a page in Heroes Unlimited Revised with maybe the best thing in the Heroes Unlimited Revised magic section. A giant table to tell you what random evil shit you summon when you make a summoning circle. There is so much to love about this table. And with your permission, the rest of this episode, you know, fuck Mystic Shield. Like, Heroes Unlimited 2nd Edition should have had Mystic Shield and not Energy Field, or Energy Field and not Mystic Shield. Whatever. I'm done. I'm so bored I can't even continue. I can't finish my sentence. The thing to know is, this section is riddled with 14 lines here, 15 lines there, 6 lines here that didn't need to be here. Like, a couple days ago, when we talked about that whole paragraph, that whole long paragraph of why this spell is good if you play in a fantasy world, which Heroes Unlimited isn't set in, like that. It's probably 10 lines. All those needless lines of text add up, and they take up space that could have been used to print this brilliant table that I'm just going to gush about for the rest of this episode, okay? So much to say. So where do I start? First of all, remember I complained about circle magic being taken out of Heroes Unlimited 2nd Edition, and I complained that without circle magic, you can't do all these cool power circles, like the one that turns you invisible, but you have to go get the complete skeleton of a toad first. Or the power circle colon power, where you have to get a tiger's skull and wear it as a hat, but then you can give yourself unlimited power and make everything in the room float around you and charm all the ladies and raise the dead, etc., etc. It's badass. That's just one type of circle. In addition to power circles, there are also summoning circles. Summoning circles summon monstrosities from beyond the stars or beyond the dimensional veil, first of all, which is great. Classic wizard stuff, already I'm sold. Secondly, though, there's none of this faffing around about like, oh, I'm going to summon a half-fire giant wind genasi that I've discovered during my perusal of Monster Manual 12. And I think you'll find that with his number of hit dice, that if I apply the pseudo-natural template, he'll have a number of tentacles equal to my caster level, each of which can be used to wield. None of that shit. Summoning is boring when it works well. And that's why Heroes Unlimited Revised took the bold but amazing step of simply taking out the possibility for summoning to work. When you make a summoning circle, there is literally no chance that you will intentionally summon a thing. All that can happen is you summon a random-ass monstrosity from some other place, and now you've got to deal with it, which is the fun thing about summoning. Summoning is most fun when you fuck it up, so why not just pre-fuck it? Fucking up is just baked right in. That is the process of summoning in Heroes Unlimited Revised, and that's fantastic. So that's the first thing to love about this. You make your magic circle, you say your magic words, then something appears at random. And what is that something? It is a something generated using the Random Mystic Creature Creation table, which has 6 subtables describing every facet of the abomination you have summoned. You get a random evil alignment, or selfish, Some of these monsters are anarchist, or even unprincipled. You might summon a tentacled horror who's a white-collar criminal. You get a random hit point and SDC total. You get a random size. Note that the results of those two tables have no bearing on one another. Classic Palladium design. Give me two tables, totally random, for two things that should definitely be connected, but don't connect the results of those rolls, and we have the chaotic randomness that drives fun Palladium rules. You can absolutely roll a creature that has 120 hit points, 200 SDC, is 3 feet tall, and weighs 50 pounds. That is on the table. Likewise, a towering 25-foot tall monstrosity that turns out, if you actually go up and punch it, only has 10 SDC? Sure, why not? What part of senseless horror don't you understand? It's senseless. There's a table of natural abilities for your horrible monstrosity. These range from the low power but evocative, like a 90% climb skill, so whatever you summon can, you know, climb up on the ceiling and walls and stuff, to the weird and flavorful, like being able to metamorphosis into a spider, scorpion, or beetle, to the quite powerful, like invisibility. We also get random tables for hand-to-hand combat, a random table for special powers. The monster may have spells or may have superpowers. You never know what you're going to get. And there's even a table for random appearance of your monstrous mystic villain, which includes bird monsters, cat monsters, spider monsters, skeleton monsters, tentacle monsters, gargoyle monsters, and energy beings who have no physical form and are only a floating sphere of energy with telepathy and energy bolts, among others. You combine all these things together. You shake them around. Every summoning is an adventure. You create the summoning circle. You don't know what you're going to get. Could it be an unscrupulous but good-hearted, 10-foot-tall blob of energy with no physical form that has 50 SDC and has the superpower of vibration and can turn into a scorpion for some reason? Sure. It's just one of the many possibilities. This is such a great Palladium table. One of the best. Really gives the feel of like doing dark magic where you don't know what you're getting into. And there's all this potential to access like powers and abilities that your character doesn't normally have by summoning a creature who randomly has them. It's like Dial H for Hero, if you're familiar with that old comic book. Two kids, Chris and Vicky, I believe, who have these magic dials. And when they dial the word hero, I think for them, they actually just dial the letter H. There's a previous version of the hero dial that this other kid had. Anyway, my point is, what would happen is every time they transform into a different new superhero with random abilities. So when they would discover that a crime was happening, they would dial H with their magic dial, and they just become a superhero, which would be like a superhero submitted by readers with like a new costume design and powers and everything. And sometimes it would be the shits. Sometimes they would say as much on panel, you know, there'd be like the glory panel where they both transform and narrate to each other who they now are. And so Chris would transform and he'd be in this goofy ass costume and he'd be like, I've become Bicycle Behemoth, a 15-foot tall doofus in goggles with a scaled up bicycle that I ride around. Too bad that's no fucking good in this situation. And he would pick up his bicycle and go run after the bad guy, right? Because that's the power he got, so here he goes. But then other times they would get exactly the power that they need. It was really fun. Similarly, imagine the play experience if you're a wizard who knows how to make a summoning circle and you're in a real bind, you know? Your sanctum has been invaded by robots or something. It's like not in your wheelhouse. This is not a magic problem. I don't know what to do about this because all my spells are about fixing magic shit. So let me just whip up a summoning circle and your teammates are like, do you know how to summon a rust monster or do you know how to summon? And you're like, guess what, buddy? I don't know how to summon anything. All I can do is make a summoning circle and see what pops out. And if we're lucky, it's going to have some random ass superpower that none of us have that can deal with robotic home invaders. And if not, we'll ask it to leave nicely and hope for the best. This is like seedier pants magic. It's so fun to play. And it could have been in Heroes Unlimited 2nd Edition. The entire table, as cool as it is, as much endless fun as you're going to get summoning random shit off this table or having it summoned and sicked on you by evil wizards. It's multi-purpose. That whole table is like 101 lines, which I grant you, that's a lot to fit into your crowded magic section. But if you've got 14 lines to waste on having Energy Field and Mystic Shield in your game, two functionally identical spells, just that one of them gets better and one of them doesn't, then you've got room for 101 fucking lines of pure gold with the Monstrous Mystic Villains table. I truly love this table, and I bring it up by means of like defending myself from charges that I'm nitpicking too much in this section. All these little things add up. All these little things that don't need to be here could have been cleared out to make room for this table, among other things. So that's the moral of the story today. Redundant spells are not a victimless crime. It's the Monstrous Mystic Villains who suffer the brunt. Won't someone please think of the Monstrous Mystic Villains? Today we're discussing page 329 of Heroes Unlimited. We're in the magic section, and we've been discussing a lot of fanciful comic book crime fighter style magic. Mystic shields, lightning summoning, curses that knock out security cameras, many spells that hide things from sight. But not every player who chooses a magic user wants to be just another superhero, only with maybe a sash and fancy boots. Not everybody wants to be a four-color magical crime fighter. And why should you have to be? After all, here in Heroes Unlimited 2nd Edition, the magic system has been updated to be compatible with all Palladium's other games. So, you know, Rift has badass magic users beyond the supernatural, certainly as spooky magic, likewise Palladium Fantasy. So if you want to be a spooky wizard in Heroes Unlimited, then there's no reason that you shouldn't be able to. And this page offers, albeit fleetingly, to allow you to play the spookiest of all wizard types, the Necromancer, the Dread Necromancer, one of the strongest wizard archetypes, always a popular choice among a certain type of player. Heroes Unlimited doesn't have a ton for you. You know, it has some fear spells we've talked about. It's got a turn undead spell for all the good that'll do you in a game with mostly no undead in it. But it also has a spell found on this page, the first of the level 7 spells, Animate and Control Dead. I'm not a big Necromancer player, but I love the concept. I love the character archetype. I love to see it played well. I like to have it at the table with me. And as a fan of Necromancers, I am extremely disappointed at what this spell offers. Let's just go through it, because as it turns out, this character archetype, while technically supported in Heroes Unlimited 2nd, is pretty pathetic. First of all, this spell has a range of 400 feet and a duration of 5 minutes per level of experience. Already, our troubles are beginning. The bare minimum for effective necromancy is undead minions who can provide their own goddamn transportation. You can't be carrying lifeless corpses with you around everywhere you go. Number one, as a practical matter, corpses tend to draw attention to themselves. They're bulky, they're hard to move around. There are a lot of places, even in this enlightened age, where they won't let you take a corpse, like a fancy restaurant or an airplane. So if you gotta be carting corpses around with you and then turning them into zombies or skeletons or whatever on the spot when it's time for a fight, you're severely limiting the kind of crime-fighting life you can lead. Secondly, practical matters aside, being a necromancer is a lot about style, right? The black clothing, the dour expression, the trappings of death and magic in your dark den. This effect is somewhat disrupted by, like, pulling around a rickshaw full of dead guys. Also, it makes it seem like you're bad at your job. If he were a good necromancer, onlookers will think, those corpses would be carrying him, and they're right. It's not dignified. So, at a duration of 5 minutes per level, already, this is like not a good basis for a necromancer build. If you want corpses ready for you on hand to cast this spell, you know, you can raise them for 20, 30 minutes here or there, but for the most part, you're going to have to transport them around by other means, and that sucks. Anyway, on to the main body of the spell. Quote, with this incantation, the Arcanist can animate the remains of dead bodies, human, animal, or monster, and mentally control them like a puppet master would a marionette on strings. The remains are not alive and do not have any intelligence whatsoever. It is the sorcerer who controls and directs their actions. Strike two. I'm not looking for evil undead geniuses here. I'm not saying create vampire lords and liches and vengeful ghosts. Nobody wants that. Those spells sit dusty and unused in Dungeons and Dragons for a reason. The number of vampires, ghosts, or liches you would ever want to create are respectively 0, 0, and 1, maybe, yourself. You don't want anybody competing with you to be like the mastermind of your little death magic troupe. However, you want some baseline level of intelligence, just a little bit. Like, even zombies. You know, zombies, you don't think of them as intelligent, but they know how to get what they want. Or, more to the point, what you want. You can point a zombie in a direction and say, hey look, brains, go get them, boy. And then there goes the zombie. You don't have to micromanage it. These things you can create with this spell, they've got nothing. You control them completely. In fact, if they go out of your sight, then they can't do anything. You have to stand there and watch what they're doing and like tell them what to do at all times. Like you're a captain on Star Trek, a series that has the dumbest space battles of all time, as much as I love it, because you've got this one useless lump sitting there in a chair in the middle of a heated dogfight, yelling at the pilot and the weapons guy like, yes, chase him, continue to chase him, lock on target, then fire at the target, now lock on target, now fire at the target. Remember, per Starfleet procedure, every individual button press must come directly from the top of the chain of command. No, you can't just keep flying without my verbal direction. This is not anarchy. That is not who we are, Lieutenant. That's what you gotta do to these undead that you can create. You gotta stand there and continually tell them to do the thing you want them to do, and watch them, and keep your eye on them, So they're like barely animated at all. Animated is a strong word for it. These are like remote control corpses. Let's say you've got enough of a hard-on for necromancy that you're willing, even though you got to carry around corpses in a duffel bag or whatever, to the scene of your necromancy, and even though they have like no intelligence at all and you got to like manually grab them by the scruff of the neck and go hold them in front of somebody and be like, fight him, continue to fight him, hit him with your rusty sword, go, go, go. And if you take so much as a second to like look away and check your watch, all your undead minions go limp. Even if you're willing to accept that, what kind of undead minions are we talking about here? Quote, each of the animated corpses or skeletons has two attacks per melee, a speed of 7, and inflicts 1d6 damage from punch, bite, claw, or blunt weapons. They are robot-like SDC structures and inflict SDC damage unless they wield a special weapon. Then there's a special note that the corpses you animate cannot use bow and arrow, crossbow, sling, or guns. So for combat, these things are garbage. They're slower than a regular person, which is to be expected. They have only 2 attacks per melee, which is like half as much as you get if you're a first level character who's done self-defense training at the Y. On one hand, I appreciate that because if we're going to have like a mob of minions for one player character, you want to keep their number of attacks down. But in terms of damage output, when you combine a really weak damage of 1d6 plus nothing and you only get 2 attacks per melee, this is pretty piddly. How are they on defense? Well, they have no hit points, obviously, because they're not alive. For SDC, we get the following. SDC of a small corpse slash skeleton about 3 or 4 feet tall is 50 SDC. Medium, 5 to 6 feet, is 80 SDC. Large, 7 to 12 feet, is 140 SDC and 200 for giants. So the average size skeleton, 5 to 6 feet tall, 80 SDC, that's not bad. It's not great, but it's not bad. More importantly, where do they think that you're finding giant corpses? Like, this would be hard enough in a fantasy game, but it would be fun to go, you know, sneak into the giant graveyard and abscond with a big giant 200 SDC skeleton of some recently departed pillar of the giant community. But in Heroes Unlimited world, this is like the quest of a lifetime. It's so dumb. I'm going to pick it as the dumbest thing on this page, only because it's something I can actually be positive about. Even though it's dumb to give rules for animating giant skeletons in a game with, you guessed it, no giants, you know, in the sense of like monsters that are giants. They're giant superheroes, but there are no Jack and the Beanstalk style giants in Heroes Unlimited. But if you can find one, if you can just, I mean, in the whole magical, weird-ass history of this kitchen sink superhero setting, there has to have been at least one giant who lived in a tower in the sky, right? So if you can just find out where that motherfucker died and go dig him up, then you too could have a 200 SDC skeleton and be the envy of all the other shitty necromancers in your Heroes Unlimited game world. But yeah, generally speaking, because this is not a fantasy game, pretty much you're dealing with humanoid skeletons that are like 5 to 6 feet tall. Maybe you can get one 7 to 12 feet tall if you go animate an animal or, you know, Andre the Giant or whatever. And the SDC's pretty good. However, quote, the mage can animate and control only 2 corpses or skeletons plus 1 per level of experience. So, you know, while the SDC is good, the question is, do your enemies really need to get through it? Let's say you're mid-level. Let's say you're level 5. It's pretty impressive already, right? That's a relatively high-level character. You can animate 7 corpses. Given the kinds of enemies you're fighting if you're a mid-level superhero, how much trouble are your foes going to have getting around 7 unintelligent, slow, earthbound, 2 attacks per melee skeletons who only do things or move anywhere when you specifically tell them to? So the SDC is nice, but it's not like your enemies are going to have to chip through 7 warrior skeletons with 80 SDC apiece before they can take a crack at you. They'll probably just walk around the skeletons. Right? There are a few other miscellaneous rules. It's about what you'd expect. Smashing attacks do full damage to skeletons and these like weird corpse puppets you can make. Fire does double damage. Arrows and bullets do half damage. Overall, what a disappointment. I wanted a necromancer. I wanted to raise my hands in an unholy gesture of magical power and have corpses rise up out of the earth and start shambling toward my foes, walking around protecting me. I wanted some skeletons, yes. Some zombies, yes. Hey, maybe one immaterial undead? Maybe I could get a big gestalt uber skeleton to fight my really tough foes? Hey, I would have even liked a ghoul who's got like a little more intelligence, very hungry, might turn on me, but also might eat the shit out of my foes. So, you know, cost benefit. Do a little risk management in my necromancy power fantasy. Instead, what I get is basically a special version of telekinesis that is only used for flopping around corpses toward my foes like so many Muppets until either like 20 minutes elapse or I look away, at which point they'll just stand there doing nothing or flop over. And then if, you know, my hard-won corpses win the day, then I gotta like pack them in a steamer trunk or load them all in a wagon or cart and take them with me to my next necromancy engagement? Ugh, this is not what I signed up for. This is a glorified ventriloquist act. I want no part of this. The trouble is, this was never going to be good, because the space is too limited. What you need for a necromancer, unsurprisingly, is some goddamn stats for undead creatures. You know, if my thing is that I raise skeletons and ghouls and zombies, I need stats for those things, and there was no space here for that. So this necromancer archetype was never going to work with just one spell to its name. So maybe this shouldn't have been here. Which triggers my vow, and today, I've got just the thing. You know what should have been here instead of this abortive attempt at a necromancer? How about a full-blown attempt at an illusionist, a whole subcategory of magic user that was in Heroes Unlimited Revised and was cut for second edition, a whole character type. The illusionist had their own set of spells, most of which are still in this book, by the way. It's not like the illusion spells were cut, they were just thrown in the general population. They had their own little character creation blurb. They're mostly just like wizards, but they just know different spells, because they're like not full-blown wizards. They just know sort of tricksy spells. This would have been perfectly easy to implement. It would have been so easy. In the space this one spell takes up, you could have added to the magic power category just a little block saying, an illusionist is a special kind of mystic study character who knows only spells from the following list and is missing certain wizard specialties, but then gets the following skills like sleight of hand, palming, disguise, blah, blah, blah. Because that's really all it is in Heroes Unlimited Revised. I mean, it's a totally separate spell list, but in this case, since you're giving the mystic study character all these spells anyway, just give the illusionist a subset of those spells and slight modifications to their character type, and voila, you've got a whole other power category with an identifiable gimmick, a type of wizard. Just think, a flavorful subset of your magic user archetype. I would argue it was impossible to do justice to a necromancer in this space, but you really could have nailed it with the illusionist. You wouldn't have had to cut that at all if you had dropped this spell. Or if you were going to have this spell, you know, maybe don't nerf it so much. If these corpses that you animate were really undead, had some basic ability to like pursue a course of action, follow simple commands when unattended, and if you did the sensible thing and said that, you know, you've got a limit to how many you can create, but then they remain under your control indefinitely, rather than, you know, only 20 or so minutes at a time. As low as 5 minutes at first level, which is nuts. What do you do with three corpses for 5 minutes? Just those simple changes would have made this at least workable. But as it is, this is not necromancy. This is puppetry. Only the puppets reek, and if you get caught with them in your trunk, you'll get arrested. Oh, and by the way, on Blind Watch today, we've got a spell called Circle of Concealment that technically conceals things from view, thus the name, but it's not really comparable to the other spells. It belongs here. You know, if you were going to pick three of these nine spells to include in the game, this would be one of them, because it's distinct from the others in a couple of ways. First of all, it creates an area of effectively invisibility. So it's like a stationary area you select rather than an effect on an individual person or item. Secondly, it's that Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, somebody else's problem field type invisibility, where the magic prevents people from paying attention to what's in that area rather than making it invisible per se. But notwithstanding the fact that this spell does belong in the game, I am, if nothing else, a completist, so we do have to compare the mechanics in this spell to the mechanics for all the other concealment spells. In this case, that's pretty easy because the mechanics are missing. It would have been really nice to know, like, can you just stand in this field and shoot arrows or bullets out of it and leave your stunned victims totally defenseless, still psychically prevented from noticing that you've set up with like a machine gun and a crate of spare ammo in your little 20-foot invisibility area. And if you can do that, does the victim get penalties to dodge based on your invisibility? Or is this like a different kind of invisibility from individual, like tactical invisibility? We don't know. As with the spell invisibility, we can surmise what those mechanics might be by comparing to another power, in this case, the invisible haze psionic power. And if we compare the best fit missing mechanics for invisibility and the best fit missing mechanics for circle of concealment, we find that they almost but not quite match. Invisible haze gives your opponents a -6 to initiative, which superpower invisibility does not. So after a long and labor-intensive process of connecting the dots that requires a stupid degree of mastery of this book and its content, we find that the rules don't match. Surprise, surprise. So that's it for Blind Watch today. Join me next time as spells continue and we discuss a pet peeve of mine about a certain magic effect in role-playing games on MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. This has been Mega Dumbcast. New episodes drop every day except for Sundays, when all the previous week's episodes drop in one big chunk for your binging convenience. Contact or check out the show wherever you want. It is Mega Dumbcast on Twitter, Instagram, Podbean, your favorite podcatcher, etc., etc. And if you like my tiny little podcast, consider giving me a tiny bit of money at ko-fi.com/megadumb. That is ko-fi.com/megadumb. MDC, Palladium Books, Heroes Unlimited, and all associated trademarks are property of Kevin Sambita. This season's theme song is To the Top by Midair Machine, whose work you can find at freemusicarchive.org/music/askagain. That's ask again, two words with a space in between. Dumbheads, I will catch you next time.